Hey listeners, before we get to this episode of Problem Solvers, here is a word from our sponsor.
With the holiday season quickly approaching, and as you stock up on stocking stuffers for family and friends, don't forget to treat yourself as well and take a chance on that idea for a business or side hustle you want to take from part-time to full-time. How? Well, today's episode is sponsored by Teachable. Whether you have an offline business that you'd like to bring online or you have a niche or passion you'd like to teach others, Teachable is here to help. Teachable is a platform that allows independent entrepreneurs and creators to build and sell fully customizable online courses and services. Join over 100,000 instructors who have transformed their knowledge into world-class courses and have earned more than $500 million to date. To help you get started, and as a special offer for our Problem Solvers listeners, visit teachable.com/solvers and enter your email for a free masterclass. It'll walk you through exactly the steps you can take to create your own online school and start making money. Again, that is teachable.com/solvers and enter your email for a free masterclass to help you get your online school started.
And now, on with the show. From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
During a time of massive change, do you change the way you think about your company? I wonder how many entrepreneurs have really paused to consider this. Because, you know, things will have to change. Maybe the product or service will change, or at least the way you deliver that product or service. Maybe your customers' needs will change. Maybe they all have changed during this pandemic. Maybe you've changed. But does the way you think about your company change? In a fundamental way, I hope it does not. And this story I'm going to tell you today should show you why. So, first, let me introduce you to this guy.
Hi, it's Greg Fleischman. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Foodster's Junk Free Bakery.
I first met Greg a few years ago. I think he might have actually just called me out of the blue one day. And at first I was like, why am I talking to this guy from a baking mix company? Though one of his co-founders is pretty interesting. It is Sarah Michelle Gellar, best known to 90s kids as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And in that first conversation, I was interested to hear about all the unexpected challenges with having a famous co-founder. Like, fun fact, when your co-founder is famous, people waste a lot of your time. People would try to get interviews with Foodsters, not because they cared about the job, but just to try to meet Sarah. Or investors would say yes to a meeting, again, not because they had any interest in investing, but so that they could get a selfie with Sarah. Very, very annoying, it turns out. But anyway, the more that Greg and I talked, the more that I found the business of Foodsters also quite interesting. And so I did a story about them in the magazine back in 2018. But a few months ago, Greg and I reconnected to talk about what was going on at Foodsters now. And the answer is...
it is hard, though. I don't think I've ever done anything this hard in my life. Work is not work to me. It's a calling, and I don't need to take a vacation from it ever, really. And it drives me, but it has been very hard.
For reasons I will explain in a minute, Foodsters had to make some big changes and abandon some big plans in order to adapt to this year of COVID. And frankly, it's led to some great outcomes for the company. They moved fast, pivoted quickly, and took advantage of the moment. And all of that is interesting to hear. But I will tell you, the moment that sticks out to me the most in this conversation I've had with Greg, and the one I have repeated quite a few times since, has less to do with the changes Foodsters made and more to do with the way Greg understands the mission of his brand. So here's what I want to do. I want to tell you the story of Foodsters during COVID and all the interesting changes that they made. And then after that, you will appreciate the thing that didn't change in Greg's mind, the way that even as change happened, something important about his company remained exactly the same. Today on Problem Solvers, it is a story of what changes and what doesn't, coming up after the break.
When you own a business, having people you can trust makes all the difference. The same goes for your bank. With U.S. Bank, you work closely with dedicated business bankers who get to know you and your business. And with their years of experience and financial expertise, you can trust you'll get valuable solutions for your business. We all need people we can trust and ask for guidance. And with U.S. Bank, you're never on your own. Schedule an appointment with the business banker at usbank.com/book. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
All right, we're back. So before we get into how COVID impacted Foodsters, let's talk for a moment about the path that Foodsters had been on. Remember, at its most basic, Foodsters is a company that sells baking mixes, cakes, brownies, cookies, but that is not how Greg describes it. Listen to his description of his company.
When we started out, it was to reinvent and reimagine a sweet baked goods experience out of the home, bring people together. And it was this new modern Toll House home and hearth moment that we were bringing into this new age.
A sweet baked goods experience that brings people together. Keep those words in mind because they'll be coming back later in this episode. And in the early days of Foodsters, it took some time to find investors who were really on board with that vision. But eventually they did. And then it was really off to the races after that.
So we built out an online business. Then we went into retail and then went into 10,000 stores from Walmart to Whole Foods to, you know, Kroger.
Now, little side note here, Foodsters definitely did have a marketing advantage with Sarah Michelle Gellar as a co-founder. People may have wasted a bunch of their time because they wanted to reach her, but she is able to get a lot of attention for the company. For example, she'd do these daytime TV talk show segments where she would bake in front of the audience. And I actually tagged along with her a few years ago when she did one of them. It was for Harry Connick Jr.'s show, when Harry Connick Jr.'s show existed. Doesn't anymore. I'd never seen how all of this goes down. So it was really fun to watch. Before going out to do the show, she and a whole bunch of people, myself included, walked over to this like floating kitchen television set that was just hanging out in a big industrial looking room. And then Sarah and a producer walked step by step through how the segment would flow.
Yeah, so then once, and then if you want to verbally say, you know, once it's done, you want to put it in the fridge so that it gets nice and, you know, chilled.
Yeah. Wrap it in, wrap it into a disc in the cellophane in the fridge. It's been a while since I've made a gingerbread, so we're just going through. And then
Sarah went out, totally killed it on the show. And afterwards, I was talking to her about how easy she made it look. Because, I don't know, I've never done anything quite like that on television. But I have done television segments, you know, just regular stuff where I'm like, talking about this or that, and it goes so fast and you never feel like you have enough time to make your points. And I just cannot imagine trying to do that while also getting in every step of a recipe. And she said, yeah, it took some real time to learn how to do that.
Because my first time that I went up there, I was so fucking nervous because you have to be interesting. You can't think about what you're doing. Luckily, my very first one was Rachel Ray, and she's a good old longtime friend. Mm-hmm. And so there was not a parachute, but like someone that I knew, like if she saw me get flustered, would help me as opposed to Harry, who's not a kitchen person.
Right.
But no, I should have practiced. I tell everyone now to practice, but like I did not.
She did not.
So anyway, tangent over. I just found all that very interesting. So back to Foodsters baking mix business. In the very beginning, it was going really well, but there was a problem. And the problem was baking mixes. Here's Greg again.
Purchase cycling on baking was once every 60 days because not everybody bakes every day. And that's just the way it was. You know, we're still in an overconnected world. Time was precious.
So the Foodsters team had been thinking, we need to expand out of baking mixes and into ready-to-eat baked goods. You know, stuff like cookies and donuts that you don't have to make yourself, but are just there in a box, ready to eat.
It was going to drive a big part of our scale.
And a change like this does not happen overnight. You need a lot of planning. New recipes, new marketing, new manufacturing, new distribution, different space on store shelves, new investment dollars to help it all out. The Foodsters team had been prepping for this for a long time, and the plan was to launch this new category, this new evolution for the company, ready-to-eat baked goods, in early 2020.
So we were trucking along for that to happen. And then really the economy and investment impact started to hit in Q4, right in the middle of a raise for us. And then COVID hit. And it just turned everything on its head. You had us raising capital, putting in a bank line, looking at optimizing our product offering. You had things like warehouses that we were needing to optimize as well. So you had everything that we were doing to gear up behind a new product entry. And then COVID hit, and then everything just, it was a tsunami of misery there for a little bit. So running out of money, losing a bank line.
I'm sure everyone can relate to this. We all had plans for 2020. We were all in the middle of building something. And then fundamental pillars of that plan just got yanked away. We were all left thinking, well, now what? And the answer to that question really begins before the question is asked. Like, there are things you should have in place before change comes. And the first of those things is this kind of entrepreneurial unflappableness.
I'm a pathological optimist, so I thought we were going to figure it out. So I wasn't, you know, when COVID hit, I wasn't thinking this is a disaster we better prepare for insolvency or anything like that.
But he was thinking that massive change was going to be necessary. And that is the second thing you need if you want to weather change. Because listen, change cannot be a revelation to an entrepreneur. If change comes along and you are surprised that change exists, then you are way far behind. You need to build in systems so that you are always alert to change, whether it's a global event or not.
We're always thinking and always listening. What's going on with the category? What's going on with the consumer? What's happening with our own brand? What's happening with the world in general? So if you're having those constant data streams, and then you're thinking about how they would impact your business and how you should be adapting, we are already in that mode. I'm always in that mode. And it's just principle-based business management that when you're looking at all the information coming in and how you should be setting yourself up for strength and success. And so I think when we started seeing some of these life-changing type events happening, like a national stay-at-home order and things like that, then you're like, okay, those are things that mean that you don't really just want to do a tweak to your business and a slight adaptation. You need to do everything.
And as COVID started shutting everything down, Greg and his team were thinking, okay, what's going to change here? I mean, you can start to make some assumptions. People's habits will change. People will be stuck at home with their kids and will need activities for them. People want things that are comfortable and affordable. And so as they're thinking about this, they're also watching the industry numbers, and they saw how their assumptions were playing out in the marketplace.
You have baking mix, which just exploded out of nowhere. So everybody was staying at home. They were panic buying. And you went from a category whose average velocity was 1.5 units per week per store to average of 10 or 12, unprecedented, fastest growing category during this period, and it hasn't even slowed down.
Whoa. So that's a big opportunity. And yet, it's an opportunity that creates a tension for Foodstores. Because remember, Foodstores had already established itself in the baking mix category and had now spent all of this time preparing to expand away from baking mixes. I mean, they'd still create and sell baking mixes, of course. But Foodstores' growth plan relied upon doing more than that, going outward away from it. And now, baking mixes are suddenly exploding in the marketplace. What do you do? Well, I will tell you what Foodstores did, but first we are going to take a short break. When we come back, I will tell you how Foodstores rose to the moment. It is a lot more complicated than it sounds, it turns out, because even when there is a sudden spike in demand for your product, that does not mean that you are able to meet that demand. Not without a lot of work, anyway. All right, back in a minute. On this show, we talk to entrepreneurs who are solving problems. But what does it look like when an entire town full of entrepreneurs with problems are getting solutions? That's the premise of Small Business Revolution, an original television series by Deluxe that's launching its fifth season. In each season, the show features inspirational, moving makeovers of select small businesses from a town that America votes on. And this season, they are going to Fredonia, New York. You'll see marketing makeovers, renovations with physical spaces, and businesses and lives being changed. It's at once inspirational and insightful, with a goal of reigniting America's passion for and support of small businesses, with plenty of tips for you to take away for your own business too. You will not want to miss season 5 of Small Business Revolution in Fredonia, New York, so tune in now. You can find the show on Hulu, Prime Video, and at sbr.org/solvers. That's SBR for Small Business Revolution, sbr.org/solvers. All right, we're back. So like I said before the break, Foodstores was looking at the data and seeing a massive spike in baking mixes just at the time when they were preparing to make a nationwide big rollout of ready-to-eat baked goods, aka not baking mixes. So what do you do?
It was like, okay, store traffic to Fresh Bakery was down. The amount of money that it cost to slot a new item, to fund it with intro promos, and then to fund inventory building, and then the extra team that we'd be had in place and were expanding to go after that, to me, it was like, well, we did this exercise. Let's compare going after that and all of the headwinds and tailwinds against really blowing up the ready to eat and expanding it per the original plan versus baking mix. And we did that comparison, and it was so obvious to go all in on baking mix at the time.
So now it was no longer a question of what to do. It was a question of how to do it. They were going to set aside their ready-to-eat plans, that stuff they worked on for so long, and focus all of their energy on baking mixes. And Greg has a philosophy. Everything comes down to strategy, structure, and people. So how do you line all of that up in a way that takes full advantage of the opportunity in front of you? Because the thing is, okay, demand for baking mixes at an all-time high, 8 times higher than normal, he's saying. That's amazing. But you don't get to profit off of that unless you're really strategic.
You do have to gear up manufacturing. You have to be able to fund all of that. And then you have to be working daily with all the different suppliers during this very, very wartime battlefield type exercise where supply is really important. I don't know if you've read that book, Grant, by Chernow, but it's fascinating about during the Civil War, how they were innovating against the supply chain and constantly adapting to win that war. And on this particular thing, the communication didn't have to be higher. So if there's an 8x increase in volume, first you have to have the inventory, then it has to be stocked out in the warehouses so it's accessible to all of your retail partners. And then we have to have freight carriers that are moving stuff around and in between. And so for us, we knew that we had large volume that we needed to produce. So the getting the inventory was one thing, and working with our suppliers and giving them a forecast, and then little things like literally supporting them on ingredient supply. So normally with us, that's all handled by somebody else, but we were digging in and working directly with packaging vendors and ingredient suppliers to make sure that they were supporting the manufacturers to get our product. That's the minutia and the detail of going all in. And then we were staging and working in advance with our freight carriers to get on their schedule and saying, here's when pickups need to happen, which isn't typical, right? Because it's all automated traditionally by and driven by retail. And then we were working with our retail partners and giving them what to actually buy. So that's very specific on it. But, to go back to principles was, we had to manage our own destiny. We knew that we had to be an extra set of hands for every part in the process to ensure ultimately that there was continuous replenishment happening at the shelf to be able to meet the demand that had totally exploded and was unprecedented. And if you want a good job done right and you want to know about it, you have to do it yourself a lot. So, and we did.
And of course, all of this takes money. Money that Foodsters doesn't necessarily have sitting around in bags of gold coin. So that means that investors would be required. And here, interestingly, the pandemic suddenly worked in Foodsters' favor. I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode. In the past, Foodsters had not always had the most success with investors. A lot of investors just didn't really understand the opportunity that Foodsters was putting in front of them. Because, you know, the thing is, like, data is important when pitching an investor. You can lay out all the data about the marketplace and your growth and all that stuff. But an investor needs to have a personal understanding and appreciation of the opportunity in front of them. And, you know, when we're talking about baking mixes, a lot of investors just don't get it. Just don't get it. I mean, Greg told me, you know, look at it. Like, most investors are men. They're not typically at home baking with their kids. And so they just don't see this marketplace. They don't see the opportunity. They don't appreciate how big this can get. And also, the food industry is just a notoriously hard one. But during the pandemic, things changed. They were at home with their family. And some of them, maybe many of them, were baking with their kids. Something to do. And so anyway, now you've got this new understanding and appreciation of this category. And at the same time, Foodsters is a tangible product, a product already on shelves in a category where the numbers tell a good story. And that was exactly what investors during a pandemic are looking for. And that made the conversation a lot easier.
I don't know if you heard this expression. It's like, no investor right now that I've talked to anyways, which are a lot, say, they want another unicorn plan. They don't want a unicorn plan, and they don't want a unicorn CEO founder anymore. It's like they want the camel, right? That's what we're presenting. Hot category, but look at our business model. We're not burning a bunch of cash. We're very efficient.
And it worked. Foodsters raised what Greg described as
an incredible amount of money, actually, to get us into 2021.
Now, like I said, Greg and I talked for this episode back in July, and I'm releasing this episode in December. So some time had passed, and before I wrapped this up, before I recorded this and hit publish, I wanted to ask Greg how the rest of the year went. So I dropped him a line, and his response was that the year was bittersweet. That was his word, by the way. I guess it's an unavoidable pun when you work in the baking industry. But he said that the company, you know, it continues to benefit from the surge in baking mix demand, even now, the whole year. But they indeed never got to ready to eat this year. The whole thing is being pushed off into Q1 of 2021. Although, if you're interested, they are selling that stuff early online on their website, foodsters.com. I'm looking at it right now. Good looking stuff. Powdered mini donuts, double chocolate mini donuts, snickerdoodle blondie bites. Looks pretty good. But anyway, there's more. Greg also said that every part of Foodsters has been strained this year. It required what he called unending stamina from everyone. And he wrote to me that, quote, if we weren't such a tight team driven by care, generosity, and respect for each other, there would have been a total spin out, end quote. Which actually brings me back to the conversation that Greg and I had back in July and the question that I opened this episode with. Because, you know, I wasn't taken with the Foodsters story just because it's a good tale of pivoting in crisis. I was really interested in this as a story about how to keep your eye on the core mission during crisis. And as you may remember, at the very beginning of this episode, Greg described the origins of his company this way.
When we started out, it was to reinvent and reimagine a sweet baked goods experience out of the home and bring people together. And it was this new modern Toll House home and hearth moment that we were bringing into this new age.
So at the end of our conversation back in July, I had asked Greg this. I said, you know, I imagine that before the pandemic, you guys were super excited about the ready-to-eat baked goods category. You had been planning it for a long time. It was the natural next part of your growth strategy. And I know that when I am planning for something and I'm getting my head around transforming myself or my work in some way, I start to get really psyched for what's new. I almost start to mentally move along from what now feels old. You know, it's like, ah, that stuff, who needs that stuff anymore? I'm on to the new thing. And yet, here, just as Foodsters was trying to execute these exciting new plans, everything changed. And Foodsters had to shelve this transformational new business line in favor of doing what was really more of the same. And so I asked Greg this simple question, which was that a bummer? And here was his answer.
That's a really good question. No, because I feel like it's if you're a car company, you're planning 10 years out. And I think of like BMW and they came out with their first vehicle and they're like, oh, we're going to go into like a hybrid or some other sorts and we're going to do it in this period of time and we'll launch it when the marketplace is ready for it and it's right. So that's the way I feel like it's not like we're giving up on it and we're not going to do it. It's just about timing. And I think it goes back to like, well, why do you start a business to begin with and why are you there and what's important? So our mission is about upgrading a sweet baked goods and bringing joy to people's lives. That's what it's all about. And we're doing that now through the baking mix. And then we'll get around to the ready to eat and that'll happen. But I care more about the company and it's solving problems for consumers. That's what we're all about. And we got to be constantly shifting and adapting on that.
I love that answer. I've actually cited that answer many times since Greg and I spoke in July. I bring it up in talks that I give, and I quoted it in an editor's letter in the magazine a few months ago. And the reason is because of the clarity of purpose. Greg's company had gone through a lot of change this year, but none of that impacted the core mission. This idea for him and his team that Foodsters is about bringing joy to people through sweet baked goods, as long as they're doing that and have momentum doing that, then what does it matter if their plans change a bit? What does it matter if they're making one thing today and another thing tomorrow, so long as the mission is being executed, so long as they understand who they are, so long as there's a measurement of success? That's the clarity of purpose we all need to hold on to during these times. It has been a year of change, and next year will almost certainly bring even more change. And when all of this is over, when this pandemic is just finally, finally gone, change will continue. It'll just come from other places in other ways, large and small. But if you know your purpose, then all of that change is like a flag blowing around a flagpole. North, south, east, west, doesn't really matter what direction it faces. The flag isn't going anywhere. It is grounded, just like you. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.